As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens. I am Marc-Antoine Gagné, and on this beautiful Friday, July 17th, I am alongside Arpin Basu, just as usual. Arpin, my friend, how's your Friday going so far?
Not bad. This has been a good week. I wish we were alongside each other, but we're not, obviously, because we're virtually alongside each other. And it's been a week of being, distanced at training camp, but it's been so refreshing to have actual things happening in the world of the Canadiens and the world of the NHL in general. And being able to talk about line combinations, and I never thought I would feel better, tweeting out line combinations than I did on Monday, you know? a total breath of fresh air and a lot of stuff to talk about as far as what we've seen at camp so far. There's been numerous storylines that we're going to dive into today.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, obviously for our listeners, they must understand that in Brossard, each media is allowed only one person. So we haven't been, you and I, in Brossard at the same time, so we took turns. You've been there more often than I have, and I don't know if I would start by just asking you a very broad question. What's the main thing that really caught your eye and that you found the most significant out of that first week of practice in Brossard?
Well, I think the biggest story so far is obviously Max Domi's absence, and coupled with the way Jesperi Kotkaniemi has looked and performed and just his level of sharpness. And to hear Claude Julien speak in such glowing terms about him, you know, I don't think since his rookie season and since maybe halfway through his rookie season, I don't think we've ever heard Claude speak in such complimentary way about Kotkaniemi's game and just his general approach to things. So those two things, obviously, to me, are the things that have stood out, and they're intimately tied together. And one of the most surprising things that I think of the week was hearing Claude Julien say, when asked, to what extent is Kotkaniemi's or are his plans for Kotkaniemi tied to what's going to happen to Max Domi? And Claude to say that, you know, if Kotkaniemi keeps going like he is, who's to say that if Max Domi comes back, that it would necessarily be Kotkaniemi that gets moved. So, you know, I think in a very short period of time, Jesperi Kotkaniemi has made an impression on Claude Julien, the likes of which we have not seen since basically his first training camp. It's really been striking to see to what extent Claude has been impressed with Kotkaniemi, and rightfully so. He's looked very good, very sharp, quick, and his teammates have been impressed as well. So that's been, to me, the biggest storyline of the first week of camp.
Yeah, but you're right to mention the fact that Domi not being there is obviously a big storyline. And I asked Claude Julien earlier today if basically in his in the preparation for his team and how he was conceiving his lines, even though we're not going to have the like definitive news on Domi for a few days still, if he was planning based on Domi catching up with the team at some point, or circumstances made it so that he was forced to just do as if he wouldn't be there. And you know, he had some high praises for the line that Suzuki has been forming with Drouin and Armia. And so I think that's another development. I mean, even if Domi comes back, if you've got both Suzuki at center, who shows that he's convincing at that position and comfortable enough that Claude Julien would be would be okay with using him against Pittsburgh at center position, and Kotkaniemi, who says, well, the coach says if it doesn't have to be him that would get moved if Domi comes back. Well, I would be really interested to see if Domi joins the team at any point, what sort of place there would be for him if the Canadians decide to go with the top two lines that they have built so far in this preseason, and they choose to put, let's say, Domi with Kotkaniemi, all of a sudden you have like a spreaded offense on three lines that's quite enticing.
It is, and the ripple effect would be one of Paul Byron, I would guess Paul Byron, but one of Paul Byron and Arturi Lehkonen would go to the fourth line. And then you have really four lines that are really quite interesting, because then you're looking at a line of let's say Byron replaces Weiss on the left side of that fourth line, because I don't think I've ever seen Weiss play on left wing, which is where he's been skating since the start of camp. So now you're looking at a line of Byron, Jake Evans, and Jordan Wheel, which is a pretty intriguing line. It wouldn't give Claude Julien the typical fourth line that he likes to have, sort of a heavier line that is better defensively and a good face-off man and what have you. That line doesn't exist for Claude Julien right now. He's not going to have that, so he's got to wrap his head around that. But really, the balance that Domi's return would provide in the lineup would make the Canadians a pretty difficult team to defend against, and a difficult team for Pittsburgh to match up with in terms of their bottom six. Like, basically, you know, obviously, right, Pittsburgh's top six is very difficult to match up with, and it is the biggest challenge the Canadians will face. But if they can win the bottom six matchup decisively enough to kind of counter what's going to happen on the top six, then that would give them a real chance of winning this series. And further to like where Domi would slot in, it's going to be fascinating to see what they actually do, because I think we would both agree that, you know, Jesperi Kotkaniemi's future on this team is clearly at center. That's what the team wants from him. That's what he is slated to be. And there's no question about that. Domi, on the other hand, himself views himself now as a center and really likes the position. But if we're being realistic, there's no real way for him to play a role that would be appropriate for him on the Canadiens going forward if he's still at center. Really, if he has a future in Montreal, it's most likely at left wing, where he spent the first 2-3 years of his career playing, a position that he was almost exclusively played at when he was in Arizona. So that's going to be an interesting thing. Has Kotkaniemi impressed Claude enough to force him to have that conversation with Max Domi, where already he's arriving late to camp, already he's going to be playing a bit of catch up with everyone else because he hasn't been able to participate. And then you're going to have him come in and say, okay, we're going to move you to the left side, even though we know full well that you don't like playing on the left side. That's going to be really interesting. And that's really, it would show to what extent Jesperi Kotkaniemi has shown Claude Julien something that he hadn't shown him in a very long time.
Yeah, well, I think we should not also get ahead of ourselves, because we don't know yet if Domi is going to show up or not, and that shows how fragile this whole situation is, because we know that the Canadians, when they're fully healthy, they're a competitive team 5-on-5. They got a decent depth to counter the fact that they don't have like the like top dogs up front, like the way some other teams have, namely the Pittsburgh Penguins. But at the same time, it's fragile because, and we've seen a good example today at practice with guys that, my understanding is it's for more medical reason than hockey reasons, that there were a group of five guys that were that practiced by themselves apart from the rest of the group for God knows what reason. But the whole environment that is preceding this this play-in tournament is the margin is razor thin when it comes to having a healthy lineup or losing guys either to the virus or to injuries that are bound to come up at any point. So whether it's Domi being there or not, or any other player, this fantasy roster of four lines deep that Claude can hope for, and that would make the Canadiens a decent team against Pittsburgh, it's far from being a guarantee that 2 weeks from now we're going to be able to see that.
No, it's actually more fragile than it's ever been, you know, and I don't know. I was kind of disappointed. I asked Claude today about, you know, what happened when Drouin and Byron went down in Washington in mid-November, and the team proceeded to lose their next eight games. I was hoping to get some insight of what he saw from his team during that eight-game losing streak, why they were unable to bounce back from the loss of two players, and how quickly their whole lineup became a house of cards. You know, I mean, basically they removed two cards and the whole house fell down, and now we're in a situation where not only are you susceptible to the injury bug, which is a very real thing considering how long these guys have been off, but you're also susceptible to someone suddenly displaying symptoms. And as soon as you're displaying symptoms, it doesn't even mean you don't even have to test positive for the coronavirus. Is if you're displaying symptoms, if suddenly you develop a cough, well, then you're not playing and you're being isolated until those symptoms subside. So the risk of losing, I mean, just today alone, Paul Byron did not skate. Just out of nowhere, you know, and it might be a day off for him because he was a consistent participant in phase two and in phase three up until today. So maybe they just decided he needed an extra day off the ice. Who knows? They're not allowed to disclose anything, but it just...
They said that he was unable to practice.
Which is their standard response for everyone. Yeah. But, you know, the reality is that there are a lot more reasons why players will be unable to practice or unable to play than there normally are. It's not limited to injury situations, and it's not limited even to illness. It's really as simple as showing symptoms of some sort. If you happen to catch a cough that is not coronavirus related, but my understanding is that as soon as you're showing symptoms, they're going to keep you away from the group. So I think it was pertinent in a sense that, you know, what could Claude Julien do differently, and what could the Canadiens do differently if that were to happen? Because just today we saw, you know, Philip Dano, since he skated in the first group, you saw Jordan Weal centering Brendan Gallagher and Tomáš Tatar, and suddenly the team looks very different. You know, Paul Byron's not there, and suddenly Charles Ludon is on a line with Kotkaniemi and Lekkonen, and that's not quite as... It's not quite as enticing as the line with Paul Byron. So, you know, this is true of any team, but I think particularly Montreal, you know, if they have their top 12 forwards available to them, including Domi, then yes, they have a fighting chance to beat Pittsburgh. I would even give them a decent chance to beat Pittsburgh. But if they don't, if one card is lost, we've seen it before, the whole house risks falling unless they learned something from the last experience and are able to apply. You know, Claude Julien in his answer just talked about having to adjust. Well, it's clear that the Canadiens didn't do that the last time they suddenly lost two guys, and it derailed their entire season. I'd be curious to see how they would approach it differently if they were to suddenly lose a key piece, like, say, an Armia or even a Suzuki or a Gallagher or whoever, what they would do differently from the last time this time.
Yeah, and when you say that it's true for every team, but particularly for the Canadiens, the other element to that is that the Canadiens is probably one of the only teams that are participating in the play-in that really did, let's call it a fire sale, but they lost, they sold big at the trade deadline. So, you know, if you added, if they had kept all their pieces and you add to all those 12 guys, the likes of Ilya Kovalchuk, Nate Thompson and Nick Cousins, well, all of a sudden you have enough depth to move guys around and find creative solution. You know, if it could even go as far as asking Jonathan Drouin on a pinch to say, okay, can you go and help at center? Things like that. But when you've lost an entire line at the trade deadline and replace them with guys that, you know, like Dale Weiss, who's not necessarily like an NHL regular at this point in his career, it becomes trickier than ever. So I don't know. I really hope for the Canadiens that they're going to remain healthy, but it's a big question mark. And when you understand all the things that those guys go through in terms of making sure that they don't mingle, that they don't really spend time with each other outside the ice itself, well, they're taking all the measures possible, and yet they remain vulnerable to that. So on the one hand, the coach says, oh, you know, we're still, the 26 is still a while away, we've got time to prepare our team, but it's also a while away for things to derail. And that's true for Montreal, that's true for every other
team. But I think the point you raise kind of brings us to another one of the kind of the grander themes of this training camp, is that, you know, you're right, they did sell off some veterans at the deadline. The benefit of that is that it allows some of their young players to play bigger roles. You know, so Jake Evans is suddenly the fourth line center. He's not penciled in there. It's not set in stone, but pretty likely that he's going to start the series as their fourth line center. Kovalchuk is gone. So, you know, it moves everyone up. You know, there's another spot in the top nine for someone. It actually creates the possibility of Kotkaniemi playing in this series. If Kovalchuk and Cousins and Thompson were there and Domi was there, what's the likelihood that Kotkaniemi would even be dressed? You know, it's pretty unlikely. So this whole notion of youth versus veteran presence in this series keeps popping up throughout camp. We ran a story today about Christian Folin looking like he's got the inside track on the job as a third right D.
You dared writing about Christian Folin, man.
Well, yeah.
That's
amazing. Well, I find him to be one of the more compelling sort of arguments here. You know, is it better to have someone who's a veteran just because he's a veteran? Or can you objectively evaluate his play and ask yourself a legitimate question? Would you be that worse off with Cale Fleury or Noah Juulsen in that spot, despite their extreme lack of experience, but both of whom clearly have skill sets that would benefit the team? And so, you know, I think this is just a grander theme of this entire camp is how do you approach this series? It's clear that the players want to win the series, and I don't blame them. I would want the same thing if I were them. Management, I think they see the bright side on both things. I think losing would not necessarily be the end of the world if you're management on this team. But, you know, as far as the coaching staff and players are concerned, they want the best lineup available for them to win. The question is, how much weight should experience hold in the evaluation of these players? And, you know, we spoke to Noah Juulsen today. He's obviously been through a ton of just hell, basically, health-wise over the last couple of years. Is now in a position to fight for a spot on this team. And it's hard for me to justify. You know, we still don't know what's going to happen with Brett Kulak. He still has not skated at training camp. We don't know what's going on with him. You know, Victor Mete was in the first group today. So, like, you know, we saw a bunch of wonky defense pairings at practice today. But is it okay? How much do you think Claude weighs, like, what weight does his experience have in Claude's evaluation of his players, in your opinion?
Well, considering the fact that this team lacks a lot of playoff experience. When you compare to the Pittsburgh Penguins, it's about the ratio is 3-1 game, playoff games in favor of Pittsburgh. So very limited experience on Montreal's side. So I suspect that Claude Julien will as much as possible lean on guys that know the drill. That being said, Christian Folin is 29 years old. He's a big guy, but he only has six playoff games behind his belt in his whole career. So he's not necessarily like a monument of playoff experience himself. But he's a known quantity, and I think that it's always a double-edged sword for a coach, because coaches want to know what they're dealing with. They want to know what their players are about, and they like to know what to expect from each of their players, so they're not like a jack-in-the-box from one game to another. At this point in his career, Claude Julien knows what Christian Folin is about, and maybe that he's more comfortable in dealing with his shortcomings than he would be with a younger player. Do I agree with that? No. I think that it's not necessarily applicable to Christian Folin, but some guys who are not very good, you can say, well, they're experienced, but they're experienced, but they've been struggling for just more years. They haven't been good for a longer period of time. That's their experience. You mentioned Noah Jolson. You mentioned Cale Fleury. Those guys have a lot more upside, and I don't think that they would necessarily cost you a game more than Christian Folin would. Listening to Claude, I really have my doubts that he considers Noah Jolson to be ready to be thrown in the Wolves at this point, considering the lack of games that he's played in the last year and a half. But to me, Cale Fleury would be the guy that say, well, he might have had a bit of a letdown in around midseason and eventually was sent down to Laval. But to me, he should be the guy having the inside track on that third pairing on the right side, because he's got enough of the playoff of NHL experience. It's fresh, recent experience. At his best, he's been very effective so far. I think it's time that they gave him something to a higher challenge that's going to benefit the team now, but also, and probably mainly, but also in the future.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think in Cale Fleury's case, it would be best, you know, it would probably be valuable for Claude and for his entire staff and for management as well, to, instead of remembering how he ended his time in Montreal, instead thinking about how he began his time in Montreal, how he came out of camp, how he performed in training camp under a certain amount of pressure to make the team. He was given lots of opportunity. He played a lot of exhibition games, even as the exhibition season started to sort of wind down, and you saw more veteran lineups and more closer to NHL lineups, and he performed throughout the first, you know, he played a full half season with the team, and you know, there were some hiccups, there were some mistakes for sure, there were some bad games, which is what you come to expect with a young player. The consistency is difficult to find, but when he was good and when he was on, he was good, you know, and he was an effective player for them, and definitely brought, I would say, more of a physical element than Folin does. I don't think Folin, yes, doesn't really tend to punish anyone. He won't get pushed around necessarily, but he doesn't inflict pain, you know, on opposing for.
No, it's like Peter Popovich back in the day, you know, big guy, but not necessarily
exactly.
Physical.
And Fleury was, you know, kind of realized that this is something that's lacking on this team. You know, even Shea Weber these days does not hit to hurt. He uses his body to basically separate guys from pucks and does that very well. But he doesn't really. He's not a physical presence in the sense that he's gonna hurt you with a big body check. He usually doesn't do that anymore. Cale Fleury was doing that because I think he saw a need that needed to be filled, and he could fill it. And it was at least once a game early on where he would make a hit, and you're like, ooh. We haven't had that in the Canadiens lineup for quite some time, you know? And so it's interesting. I think for Fleury, it's gotta be frustrating. You know, I mean, these guys are not willing to admit it, but you know, Fleury is not going to have a chance to play an exhibition game, you know, unless he plays in the one exhibition game that's scheduled for these guys. He's not going to have a chance in exhibition games to prove that he's ready for this the way he normally would in a normal training camp. And it's just, I just don't see how guys like this, like Brian Poehling, for instance, I don't see how he's going to crack the lineup if he's not able to play in any exhibition game. So far, he's been an extra forward in every practice. I think that's kind of the role that's been carved out for him. And there's not a whole lot he can do about that. But I think in Cale Fleury's case, it's you know, watching these practices, and you know, Claude said they intend on having a scrimmage on Saturday. Maybe that'll be a situation where someone like Fleury or Juulsen or what have you can really show something. But it's you know, it's not going to be live hitting the way they normally would in an exhibition game. It's not going to be a real game situation. It's going to be a scrimmage, but still, I have trouble getting my head around the fact that Christian Folin is a better option than Cale Fleury on defense right now.
Yeah, no, I understand, but I think there are some guys that will be on shorter leashes than others, and if let's say Christian Folin plays game one and the Canadians lose, I could see him being a victim, say, okay, well, we don't have time to see how guys are going to ease into with their new D partner or their new line mates or whatever. It's do or die right from the get-go. So so the coach might look to make changes quickly. So I could easily see him being flipped for a younger guy like Fleury or Juulsen, more so probably than Poehling, who might have to crack the lineup and push out a guy that in the eyes of the coaching staff is probably more deserving at this point. Because let's face it, I mean, in this time in Montreal this season, Poehling has not exactly lit the world on fire. And even in Laval, he was not dominating either. So I think that Poehling is at his place right now, being more in a black ace type of role. His time will come, but I'm as much as I am all in favor of giving ice time to young players for them to gain some experience, I'm comfortable with the fact that Poehling might not be one of those guys this time around.
Well, it also has to do with the other players, with the veteran guys who need to believe that the coaching staff is putting the best lineup together to win and not the lineup that would best favor development. And that's something that we're going to talk about right after this message. Hey, everyone. I'd just like to take a minute to talk about Hawthorne. So the reason Hawthorne is comforting because, you know, we're starting to loosen things up. We're going to start seeing people, even if it's at a little distance. But, you know, you don't want the first impression when you meet someone to be negative, let's say, from a smell standpoint. So that's where Hawthorne can come in, because smelling good creates that good first impression. And Hawthorne provides that for you in a way that you can avoid having to go to a store and pick through hundreds of colognes, not knowing what they smell like, not knowing how they work for you. This is where Hawthorne's system is really great, because it avoids all that. And they make a lot of the decisions for you. So here's how it works. You go on the site and you take a quiz, and they ask you various questions. It takes a few minutes, no more than that. But basically, you know, how often do you shower? How often do you shampoo? What are your grooming habits? Things of that nature. And then using all those answers, they create a profile for you. And using that profile, they recommend the products that they think best suit your profile. So really, it takes the decision-making out of your hands, allows them to create a custom package of fragrances and different products to make sure that you create that good first impression when you meet someone for the first time. So, and that's it. You're done. You take the quiz. You order what you want to order. They're going to suggest a bunch of products. You pick the ones you want, and you order them online, and you get them with free shipping and free returns if you don't like them. So really, the risk is minimal. So I would encourage you all right now to go check out Hawthorne at hawthorne.co. That's Hawthorne with an E on the end, and .co, not .com. So hawthorne.co, and use my promo code ATHLETIC to get 10% off your first purchase. So that's hawthorne.co. Use my promo code ATHLETIC to get 10% off your first purchase. Hawthorne.co. So, you know, I think from the outside, everyone has tended to look at this series against the Penguins as a development opportunity more so than an actual winning opportunity. But we heard Shea Weber talk on day one of training camp about how, you know, you play 14, 15 years in the league, you come to realize that these opportunities don't come up all the time, and I want to take full advantage. Brendan Gallagher today was talking just about how he hopes that everyone on the team understands that that these opportunities are just that. They're opportunities, and that they need to be taken advantage of. So that's why it's I think it's a lot easier for me to say, for instance, that I see a Cale Fleury as being a better option than Christian Folin, which I do. But what the coaching staff has to do is take the pulse of the room and put together a lineup that they can present to some of these veteran guys, like a Weber, like a Carey Price, and say, listen, this is what I think gives us our best chance of winning, and they need to buy into that. And if they get the impression that the coaching staff is valuing development more than winning, well, then they have a real problem on their hands. They're going to have a real trust issue on their hands, not only in this play-in, but just going forward with this group. It would become a real problem.
Yeah, but I'm sure it's not happening. I'm sure that they're really on the same page in that matter, and that the coaching staff and the players both want to win now, and they'll put development, you know, in the back seat. There's no doubt whatsoever in my mind. And you know, you mentioned Shea Weber. Guys like Weber and Price, who are the main leaders on this team, they are the ones for whom the opportunities will get fewer as they go older. So they want to embrace and take full advantage of that opportunity. And that's the message that that's going to percolate in the room, starting from there and from them, and all the way down to everybody. So the question is not necessarily about will they focus more on development than on winning now. It's, are their young guys better now than the guys that they're trying to push out of a job? And that's why we spent 4 or 5 minutes throwing the name of Christian Folin around. It's because it's a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
It's just that in my mind, Fleury and eventually Noah Jolson, my mind is not set right now as it's not clear as though if he's ready for that sort of action now with so limited time in the last year and a half. But let's just say Fleury versus Folin, that's a good example of a young guy who would, you know, you would kill two birds with one stone, because not only would you help his development, but probably that right now he could be the better defender between the two.
Absolutely. And I think another example on the opposite side of that, you know, earlier I mentioned that if Domi were to come back and move to the wing, Byron would be on the fourth line and maybe Weiss would come out. But Dale Weiss is an example of the opposite, I think. He's a guy who has playoff experience and who has performed in the playoffs in the past. Yes, his game is not where it was when he was a prominent player on the Canadiens in some pretty big playoff series. You know, he was on that team in 2014 that made it to the Eastern Conference Final, played a pretty decent role on that team and performed well enough to drive Milan Lucic insane, you know, in the second round. So he does have the experience that coaches and frankly players look for, or teammates, I should say. He does have a resume that I think a teammate would tend to say, okay, I think we could use what he brings us in the lineup, and just on the bench in the locker room between periods, having a guy who's gone through some playoff battles has some value. And it's not as if Dale Weiss is unable to play a fourth line role in the NHL anymore. I think he's still capable of it. You know, he's a good forechecker still today, can still move. He's not as fast as he used to be, but is still a pretty decent skater. Doesn't have the offensive touch he used to, but can fill certain roles and be versatile enough where, you know, in a pinch, if you need him to move up to the third line, it's not the end of the world. But so if you were really favoring development over anything else, I mean, really the option, they could have the option of just taking Evans out if they have a full lineup, if Domi is back, and just go with a line of Byron, Wheel at center, and Weiss on the right side. You know, I mean, that would give them a lot more experience, and Wheel being a good faceoff guy, you know, he's not the best defensive player in the world, but is good in the faceoff circle, so would give Claude that element at center on that line. And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised to see Wheels take most of the strong side draws on the right side of the ice, even with the way the lines are made up now. But the Weiss is kind of the opposite of Follin in the sense that Follin is a veteran with no playoff experience, so it makes it harder to argue for his inclusion in the lineup, whereas Weiss has a pretty decent playoff resume already on a team that doesn't have that many decent playoff resumes. And so the argument could be made that makes him that's a feather in his cap. That gives him an advantage in a situation like this.
Yeah, so when I mentioned earlier the fact that the Canadiens had a lot less playoff experience games than the Penguins, I think on the Canadiens there are five guys who have played 40 or plus playoff games in their career, and Dale Weiss is one of them. And of course, his skills might have been declining, but I think that what happened in the last few years, ever since he was sent down in the American League when he was still with Philadelphia, I think there was a loss of enthusiasm a little bit, and a loss of passion for the game that might have come into play. And it seemed as though this year was going to be his swan song from the NHL. But he really has... He's a guy who, when he's got his enthusiasm level high, who can really contribute and be effective. And he's got that X factor, I think, that can be helpful for the Canadiens in the playoffs, because as we saw, it might have been a different Dale Weiss back then, but he was able to make a difference and be a good contributor in the playoffs. So in that sense, I agree totally with you. And I agree also about that when you mentioned Jordan Wheel in passing about the strong side faceoffs. When I look at him and Evans playing next to each other, I think it's a good combination to have a guy like Evans who can focus, you know, taking the draws on his strong side and having Wheel next to him, so that they would help each other out in that sense. So that might help alleviate a little bit of the pressure to the young rookie centerman. So, yeah.
You know what I think is being not talked about all that much? You know, we've been talking about playoff experience and the benefit of having a second chance for a lot of players, from Kotkaniemi to Drouin, to Price even. A lot of guys who are getting an opportunity that otherwise wouldn't have. I think one thing, and honestly, this just came to me just as we were talking, but the one thing that we forget, think back to the last time the Canadiens were in the playoffs. Who, in your mind, was their best forward?
The last time they were... Max Pacioretty, probably?
Max Pacioretty was one, although he didn't score, but he got a ton of chances. Radulov was another. You know, that line was good. But the guy, to me, who really showed something in that playoff series against the Rangers in 2017 was Arturi Lehkonen. Arturi Lehkonen really rose to the occasion in that, and he was very young. He was a rookie, if I'm not mistaken. So he had a good season. It's his best season statistically in the NHL. But
18 goals.
Yeah, so but in that series, he showed an ability to take his game another notch higher under those circumstances. And I'm very intrigued to see how he's going to respond in this series, because not only does he have that, like, it's only six games of playoff experience, let's not kid ourselves, but it was a positive experience for him. I mean, they lost the series, but he played very well. And I think, you know, if you think back to that time, he was really one of the guys who was able to produce some offense against Lundqvist. You know, when the rest of the team was going dry, he was doing things. He was creating chances. He scored a couple of goals. He was an effective player. And when you look at the challenge facing the Canadiens right now with this two-headed monster that Pittsburgh has up front, like, a guy like Lehkonen becomes very, very important, because Claude does not know what's going to happen when Phil Deneau's line is not on the ice. Like, God knows what's going to happen, especially when they're designated as the road team. And so being able to put a guy like Lehkonen on the ice, especially when the center options are Nick Suzuki, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, maybe Max Domi, Jake Evans. It's not as if they're littered with these defensively responsible and experienced and hardened centers. Arturi Lehkonen, to me, risks being one of the more important players on this team in terms of, like, I could see Claude bouncing him from line to line just to make sure he's out there for a defensive zone draw, just to make sure he's on the ice in certain situations. Like, I could see him being Claude's safety blanket, if you will.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's what I was about to say. We hear Claude Julien mention guys that they can, that he can move up and down the lineup as he pleases. And obviously, being able to do that with a player is really a credit to the versatility of that player. And when he says that, it mainly speaks about Lekkonen, Byron, and Armia. Those three guys can, and you know, at the beginning of season, probably that he perceived Nick Cousins being along the same lines too. But Lekkonen is the perfect guy that you can put on any line and being a good complement. And when he's asked of taking a defensive role, which he probably will, or being the defensive consciousness of a certain unit, he's going to answer the bell. I think that the knock on Lekkonen since that rookie season where he scored 18 goals is the fact that he's had so many glorious opportunities to score. And for a guy who was labeled as a shooter when he was first drafted, it seems as though it's the one aspect that's missing from his game. But the rest of it, there are so many things to like about Arturi Lekkonen that he could be the guy, the type of guy who could make a difference in a playoff environment. And when coming back to experience, I mean, the Canadians need to know what they got from their core players in terms of playoff performance. Who are the guys that will raise their game when it comes playoff time? Lekkonen will be up for a contract in a year. So many guys will need a new contract too. That sort of information, knowing, oh, okay, when the time came, this one was able to step up, this other one did not, it might be a really good argument in choosing who the team is going to keep and who they're going to let go going forward. But Lekkonen, I agree with you. It's he's a guy that, even though he might not score many goals, even in this playoff environment, but he could really bring his game to another level.
And just one more thing on Lekkonen. So, you know, he grew up in Turku, played in the Finnish system, played in Liga at a very young age, at 17 years old, played 2 years in Kalpa, and then went to Frölunda in the Swedish Hockey League in Gothenburg, which is just across the water from Finland, from his hometown, actually, from Turku. And so his second year in Frölunda, he's a 20-year-old player. It was his last year before he became a rookie with the Canadiens. You know, he had a pretty good year in the regular season, you know, 33 points in 49 games, 16 goals. That was his second year in Frölunda. But then in the playoffs, in 16 games, he scored 11 goals. They had 19 points. They won the championship that year, if I'm not mistaken. And really, he kind of cemented himself as that type of player. And then his rookie year, he does make the playoffs. It was 2 goals, 2 assists in 6 games. And so, really, I think, you know, based on those two facts, and then since then, obviously, it's been nothing playoff wise. And really, his production has not actually suffered all that much. I mean, he has not approached 18 goals, but point wise, his production has remained pretty much consistent. And I think this year, if they had finished the year, because he'd start to heat up towards the end of the season or towards the moment when
as he always does
exactly. Which, you know, I had my annual bet with Connor McKenna. I'm convinced I was going to win it, but you know, I had bet him that he would either match or better, no, that he would set a new career high in goals with 19. He got to 13 with 12 games left, or 11 games left, so it would have been tough for him to get 6 down the stretch. But anyhow, I'm just saying that there is more of a playoff resume to Lekkonen than I think most people realize. Like, 11 goals in 16 games as a 20-year-old playing in the Swedish Hockey League for a championship caliber team is pretty impressive. So I really do think everything is set up for Lekkonen to really be kind of a bit of an X-factor player for the Canadians in this series.
Oh, and Claude Julien would love that because he likes his Lekkonen.
What coach doesn't like his Lekkonen? You know, he's a coach's dream.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I don't know how long they're going to you know, the conundrum that they're facing cap wise I wonder if he's going to be a casualty in the medium term. If they're, because obviously he's like the middle class type of player, and they might have to really dig into this a little bit to pay some other guys more. So I've been wondering in the past if he wouldn't be a bit of a casualty of that in a year or two. But I mean, we'll see. For the time being, I think that he's an important player. But as far as showing if you can step up your game, one guy that nobody's mentioned since camp open is Jonathan Drouin. And Jonathan Drouin being on the same line as Nick Suzuki, most probably in a two-way environment, you know, that two-headed monster. Well, obviously, Philippe Danault is going to take care of one guy, but if he takes care of Malkin or Crosby, the other one will probably fall on Nick Suzuki's lap. So if he's paired with Jonathan Drouin, I'm really looking forward to see what sort of a responsible Jonathan Drouin player we're going to see in the upcoming play. And you know, we've mentioned so often how the beginning of season suggested that he might have turned a corner in his career. We're going to soon find out if it's true or not. If it was just a flash in the pan, if it was just something in passing, or if it was truly the beginning of something. Because him and Suzuki together, it could be really promising.
Well, yeah, and you add Armia in there. You know, I like what Claude said today when asked about that line, how he just likes the mix. And so do I, frankly. Yeah. You have a lefty shooting Drouin who's super fast and hyper skilled. I mean, he is, you know, I think if you took a poll of NHL players and says asked who is the most skilled player on the Montreal Canadiens, Jonathan Drouin would win, like, going away. Like, it wouldn't even be close. Like, I think he would get like 90% of the responses. So you have that. You have Nick Suzuki, who is just a great combination of just about everything you need, especially like the hands and the vision and the sort of the understanding of the ebb and flow of a game. He really has a good grasp of that. And then you have Armia, who's able to win his board battles, maintain possession, get out of scrum situations with the puck on his stick. You know, all the things that you need to get the puck to two skilled guys like Suzuki and Drouin. And Armia himself is no slouch in the skill department, probably has the best wrist shot on the team. You know, Eric Engels and I were watching practice today, and we were just marveling at him just whipping pucks with ease at like, you know, 90 miles an hour, or 85 miles an hour, whatever it was. It just looked easy to him, and all the players on the team always talk about that. So yeah, that's that combination of skill sets on that line, I think is really promising. But my question is, to what extent would Claude... I mean, Claude has heavily hinted that Nick Suzuki is going to get what you just mentioned, that he is going to get whoever Phil Deneau cannot take out of those two top lines. Yep. But I wonder if, as the series goes on, if the Canadiens wind up start having trouble scoring, if Claude might be tempted to get those guys away from that responsibility to try and add, you know, and use, let's say, a Lehkonen and a Byron... with I don't know who at center, but use them against and give them some of the more difficult matchups to free up the Suzuki line to do some scoring, you know, because we've seen in the past that when you get a tough assignment defensively, it's hard to do both. It's hard to produce on offense and be so focused that you don't allow some of the big superstars on the other side to hurt you, because all it takes is a momentary lapse and pucks in your net. So that's tough in a playoff situation. You know, it's really difficult. And so I'm wondering if, you know, yes, maybe now Claude Julien has it in his mind that Nick Suzuki would get that matchup. But at some point, as we've seen many times over the past several years, if the Canadiens show an inability to generate chances and put pucks in the net, if he's going to have to try and get that, free up that line a little bit to take care of that.
Yeah, well, I'll go back. It's I don't know who's the other... Who's the alternative to Nick Suzuki, to be honest? Because in my mind, it's not Jesperi Kotkaniemi. I would see Jake Evans before Kotkaniemi, you know, getting that role alongside two veteran wingers like Byron Lehkonen, for example.
Yeah, I can see that too.
I'm going back. Yeah, it's far from ideal, but you know, you got your you're back against the wall. You're down 0-2 in the series, and your team is struggling to score goals. That might be like a desperate option, but that's where a team that goes into playoffs doesn't trade Nate Thompson.
A veteran guy on the fourth line is there
exactly for that reason, to be able to take some of that burden and get some responsibilities, even though it might be for a short period of time, but he's going to do that. Now you're forced to turn to a younger player, and honestly, if it's not Jake Evans, I don't know who it would be. Again, it might depend. During regular season games over the past 2 years, Max Domi, as a centerman, has seen quite a few of those assignments against Crosby and Malkin. So if he comes back, it could be him. Mm-hmm. That's another dimension where you could ask Domi to maybe focus on the offenses, go score us some goals, and ask Suzuki to be more of a shutdown type. But either way, you've got more flexibility if Domi is there. If he's not, you're growing thin very, very quickly.
I just, you know, since you brought up his name again, I just wanted to, maybe the last thing that we discuss here, but I found today's, Friday's media availability with Jesperi Kotkaniemi to be interesting on some levels, in the sense that, A, we have not spoken to him or heard from him since early March, since he suffered his spleen injury. And even before that, we have not heard him as a member of the Canadiens since late February. Late February. So, you know, it was interesting to see kind of his persona and how he was kind of guarded in his responses. He didn't want to say too much. He didn't want to...
Guarded?
Yeah.
Barricaded.
Barricaded, yes. It was not the normal, fun-loving, effervescent Jesperi Kotkaniemi that we've come to know.
No.
But, you know, he did provide some tidbits of information, but more interesting than that was when Claude Julien was asked if he's seen a change in his personality. And I was surprised to hear Claude answer honestly and say yes, that he's still smiling and having fun, but he's come to realize that, when he jumps on the ice, it's work time. It's not fun time anymore. It's time to go to work. And that's a change in mentality that all players go through. And it was very interesting to hear him talk about, you know, how young players, you know, when they make the NHL, it's like, oh, everything's great. I'm in the NHL. This is awesome. Nothing could go wrong. And then you start to realize what it takes to survive and thrive in the NHL, and that it's not fun in games. It is work. It's your job. It needs to be looked at in that light, and how he's getting that vibe from Kotkaniemi now. And I thought just the way that Kotkaniemi was addressing us, very businesslike, very... matter-of-factly, you know, just listen, this is what's gonna whatever happens happens. If at one point he said, if I'm not in the lineup, I'll be sitting in the stands cheering the boys on, you know, kind of thing, like, but very business-like approach from him, not wanting to give us too much, obviously. But then to hear Claude say that, I thought that was a really interesting shift in what we know about Jesperi Kotkaniemi, because he's always been a very serious competitor and is a harsh critic of his own game, but we always saw him on the ice having fun, smiling, enjoying himself, being a fun guy to be around. And, you know, he looks like Kawhi Leonard now instead of the guy that, you know, the guy that we used to see. So I thought that was one of the more interesting things to come out of that whole availability today, I thought.
Yeah, that's true. The more business-like approach, it might, you know, there are so many things that might have been, in French we say, un mal pour un bien, you know, but he took, there's a lot of silver lining to be taken from what happened during the pandemic to this kid. I mean, following his injury, being able to come back and showcase himself in a very unlikely circumstance, because for all accounts, his season was meant to be over. So he's got an opportunity there to come back and redeem himself. But it's striking to me how he really, not only does he doesn't want to talk about his injury. I mean, he didn't want to share any details about it.
He next questioned you. You got a next question from him.
I know. I know. I mean, he channeled Andrei Markov. I mean, it was the first time since Markov that a player actually next questioned me. Anyway, I don't take it personally. It's fine. I think that he felt the pressure of not getting into those details. He suggested it, say, "Oh, I'm not even sure if I'm meant to answer that. I'm allowed to answer that." But the injury he wants to leave behind, and his whole season he wants to leave behind. It's like the idea of saying, "Okay, it's a fresh start now." Now it's going to be the way his coach in Laval would put it, Joël Bouchard, it's going to be Kotkaniemi 2.0.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, the Kotkaniemi 2.0, like for him to say today, for him to admit that everyone knows skating was not the strongest part of my game before, you know, and the step that he took during the pandemic to go and seek out coaches, you know, there's an Olympic speed skater in Finland, Jani Hanninen, and a former NHL player and a KHL coach and a Liga coach, Raimo Suominen, and they work with Finnish NHL players and KHL players and pro players in general every summer. And, you know, last summer, Armia went to work with them and asked Kotkaniemi if he wanted to come along. Kotkaniemi said no. I found out since then that he was invited to come down to Turku and work out with the NHL guys there. He said no. This time, He as soon as he was cleared to get on the ice, he decided to go and have a few sessions with Hanninen and Suominen, you know, both of whom who kind of refused to talk to me because they didn't want to. I think they wanted to keep the pressure off of Kotkaniemi, but I'm hoping both of them said that maybe we'll talk at a future date and we could talk about it in more detail then. And I'm hoping to do that because, to me, just that step of going to see these guys and working with these guys and addressing what is the biggest weakness in his game is a direct reflection of what Claude was saying about the change in his personality, is that there is a workmanlike aspect to him that maybe wasn't there before, in the sense that I'm not saying he didn't work hard before, but maybe there was a belief that whatever work he was doing had served him so well up until this point that he saw no reason to change. Now he sees a reason to change. He sees what happened based on his preparation for last season, and maybe that's a switch that'll flip and stay on for him, and he'll look back 10 years from now and think of this the whole time as being a time that really propelled him to the Canadians have to hope to becoming a great player between now and then.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I might sound like an old uncle here who's generalizing, but what if it was something also that's generational, where younger players arrive and they're so thriving on their confidence that sometimes can be borderline cockiness or swag. I think that KK definitely had a swag last year. And it's at some point, you know, when you're first you're faced with obstacles and adversity, that swag, that confidence is shaken up a little bit. So the young player who says, "Oh, everything's going to be cool, everything's going to be all right, I'm going to fit right in," that confidence is what helped them get to that level. But it has to be pushed a little bit and put to the test. And I think that KK has lived it, and yesterday Cale Fleury was along the same lines, was saying that okay, I was sent down to the American League at some point in the season because my play has dipped because I got too comfortable. I mean, we're talking about a 21-year-old guy who's you know, who's a rookie in the NHL, and yet he's at some point says okay, he feels comfortable. Those guys, I mean, in the olden days, the rookies would stay on their toes for the first two or three years. So I think it's an interesting process that's definitely beneficial for them to go through those hurdles and learn to tweak their approach to the game to go and really exploit who they can be as hockey players. So that's why I was talking about a silver lining for Kotkaniemi, because the whole thing might turn out to be extremely beneficial for him.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's hope so. I think he's I hesitate to say he's at a crossroads. He's not at a crossroads. Let's be clear. He just turned 20 2 weeks ago, or not even 11 days ago. So he's not at a crossroads, but I feel like it's hard not to feel like something has changed. You know, I don't know if it's like a distinct change in his personality, but something has definitely switched in him. To make him realize that, you know, you have to remember that at every step of his career, he's always been ahead of where he was supposed to be. He's always been a higher level than he was supposed to be. And it has always worked out. His talent has always gotten him through every challenge that he had, even playing professional hockey in Finland at age 17, playing on their U20 team when he was like 14 or something. I mean, it's just ridiculous how far advanced he was. And at every step, it just took him a little while to adjust, and his talent got him through. And at the NHL level, he would hardly be the first player to realize that talent alone will not get you through. So hopefully this is a change, a long-term change. So before we finish...
Do you know who's at crossroads? Yeah. Who? Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Who's at a crossroads?
You and I.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You and I. So before we go, I just want to talk... I just want to talk about our podcast actually a little bit, and I want to hopefully, if there's some local Montreal business owners who are listening to our podcast, I'm speaking directly to you. You know, obviously, Mike Antoine and I do this every week. We have a very loyal listenership. Most of our listeners live in Montreal. You know, a good majority of them. We obviously have listeners a bit everywhere, but most of them are in Montreal. So if we're starting to reopen, society's opening up, you want to get word out about your business and try and start generating more foot traffic or more business in general. You know, our listeners, more than 70% of our listeners listen to our entire podcast. And so you have an incredible opportunity to reach out to Montreal listeners and tell them about your business. So if you'd like to do that, if you want to advertise on our show, Le Sport Athletique, you just go to www.theathletic.com/podcastads. That's www.theathletic.com/podcastads. And there you can fill out a very simple form. We'll get back to you right away. So if you're interested, go to www.theathletic.com/podcastads today. And if you're a listener who has not yet subscribed to The Athletic, now is the best time to do it. Marc-Antoine and I will be pumping out stories because we have actual things happening on the ice to write about as opposed to the four previous months. So now would be the time to jump on board with The Athletic, not only for our hockey coverage, but baseball starting up, basketball starting up. The NFL will be here in the fall, hopefully. So we have all the bases covered, especially if you like European soccer or football, whatever you want to call it. We have everything covered here at The Athletic, and listeners of our podcast get a special 40% off discount on their first year of their subscription if you go to www.theathletic.com/athletic support. That's theathletic.com/athletic support to get your 40% off the first year of a new subscription.
You're not new doing this, huh? It's not your first time.
It's not my first ad read, let me say.
No,
I'm good at good at reading ads. But no, all that was easy. All that was basically ad libbed, you know? Like, listen, we have a podcast.
Yeah, no, I know.
We have a podcast. We want you to subscribe to The Athletic so you can read our stories, because they go way more in depth than we do on this podcast. And if you're an advertiser and you want to reach listeners, we have listeners. So come see us, theathletic.com/podcastads for that. And otherwise, we will see you next week, when I think we're going to have a whole lot more stuff to talk about, because Claude Julien is going to shift the focus of his camp next week to the Pittsburgh Penguins. He's going to shift the focus away from fine-tuning the Canadian zone system, and he's going to start tailoring it to what they'll see from the Penguins. So I'm fascinated to see what Canadians camp will have in store next week.
Absolutely, absolutely. And for me, I'm going to drop one more link, and that's www.gobacktowritingarpin.com. So thank you, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. And have a nice weekend, everybody. All right, bye-bye.